From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, ancient structures and ancient civilizations. Here's what's happening. Of course, in Connecticut, the sadness continues. One boy was buried in his hero's football jersey in a very small white coffin. Balloons and a teddy bear welcome mourners to the funeral of his first grade schoolmate. The two funerals ushered in what will be a week of memorial services and burials for the 20 children and six adults massacred at the elementary school there in Connecticut. The shooting, of course, sent waves of anxiety across the country on the first school day since the 20-year-old gunman opened fire on the students and teachers in that close-knit community last week. As a matter of fact, a number of schools began to send out notices to parents telling them exactly what their procedures are for safety. In St. Louis County, Missouri, Police Chief Tim Fitch there says it's time to talk about arming civilian school personnel following Friday's massacre, comparing it to the arming of airline pilots after the 9/11 attacks. Senator Dianne Feinstein, California, pledging that she will introduce new gun control legislation at the beginning of next year's congressional session. Feinstein said that the purpose of her proposal, a version of the assault weapons ban that expired in 2004, is to get weapons off the streets of our cities. Weapons of war, she calls them. John Lott, of course, author, More Guns, Less Crime. John, I want to get your take on this, first of all. Would you describe to us what an assault weapon is?
All right, well, that's an excellent question. You kind of wonder whether a lot of the people who are speaking about this know what they are. Yeah, look, it's pretty much a made-up term. You have military weapons, M16s, AK-47s that are machine guns. You can flip back and forth between semi and auto mode. Automatic means one pull the trigger, many bullets come out. Semi-automatic means one pull the trigger, one bullet comes out. These assault weapons, these civilian weapons, are not guns that would be used by any military around the world. They have no machine gun capability. They're purely semi-automatic weapons. One pull the trigger, one bullet comes out.
They're like big pistols almost, aren't they?
Right. Well, they just look, to some people, just like the way military weapons look. So they like the cosmetics on the outside, but it's still just like a regular semi-automatic hunting rifle. And so, you know, here's the deal. If they want to go and demonize semi-automatics, they ought to go after all of them, not just ones that look a certain way on the outside, just because they have plastic shaped in a certain way on the outside of the gun.
They all perform the same way, right?
Right. They should either object to guns based on how they perform, or they should, but objecting to them on the basis of how they look just doesn't make a lot of sense. You know, with regard to Feinstein, it's kind of interesting. I kind of wish some of these reporters would ask her questions. Like, didn't she predict a huge, more than double-digit increase in violent crime and murder rates after 2004 when the assault weapons ban sunset? What's happened? Why did she get that prediction wrong? What does that tell us about whether she's likely to be right about the current legislation?
Well, you are right too, John. I think everybody that does not understand guns and weapons would think of an assault rifle as a submachine gun that we see in the military or that we see in these movies. And nobody,
he calls it a weapon of war. The president refers to it as weapons that soldiers would carry. He's used the term machine guns. I've been on CNN this morning and several other times over the last few days. I can't tell you the number of times where the hosts, whether it's Wolf Blitzer or Soledad O'Brien or others, refer to these guns as machine guns.
That's sad. Yeah.
You know, I suppose maybe part of it is just to go and hype things and to scare people into doing, passing legislation or supporting legislation that they otherwise wouldn't. But I don't believe if they actually describe them as the type of semi-automatic guns that are most owned by Americans, that they would get that type of support. But it's just it's just a question of whether or not people can be called on this or not. I suppose the most interesting thing is you've had five of what was considered some of the most pro self-defense gun ownership Democrats who in the last day or so have come out in favor of supporting this assault weapons ban.
Yeah, and I think that's going to grow. John, thank you so much. And of course, this discussion, please, has no bearing on the tragedy that occurred in Connecticut and the sadness that so many families are going through right now. But what it does really point out is that there's a tremendous ignorance over guns, what they are, how they're used, and they begin to try to pass legislation to ban guns when they don't even have the right terminology. And in many cases, they don't even know how they work. I'm all for safety, but I'm all for protection, too. And there's no question, it has been shown and proven that cities that approve and areas that approve, states that approve concealed weapons, crime does go down. After inheriting the title of the world's oldest living person less than 2 weeks ago, Iowa woman Dina Banfridini is dead at the age of 115. The Italian immigrant who experienced life in three different centuries resided at a nursing home in Johnston, Iowa. A woman who is paralyzed from the neck down has stunned doctors with her extraordinary skill at using a robotic arm that is controlled merely by her thoughts alone. The 52-year-old patient called Jan lost the use of her limbs more than 10 years ago to a degenerative disease that damaged her spinal cord. That disruption to her nervous system was the equivalent of having a broken neck. But in training sessions at the University of Pittsburgh, doctors found that she quickly learned to make fluid movements with the brain-controlled robotic arm, reaching levels of performance never, ever seen before. Lauren Weinstein, he watches technology for us. This is an amazing story, Lauren.
What this is science fiction coming to life now. And this is just the beginning of what is going to be an amazing, amazing sequence of devices. Because what's enabling this now is there have been some fundamental breakthroughs and new techniques for interfacing technology with the human brain. They have learned the right way, the beginnings of the right way, I should say, to read what the brain is trying to do and translate that into equipment. And what that has already done is like this woman who is able to control that arm. But that's just the start of it.
Yeah, it's the tip of the iceberg.
There is already, right now, they can implant a small grid into the eye to let certain people who have lost their vision get some rudimentary vision back because they have also learned how to send the impulses through the retina back to the brain. It's sort of the reverse,
amazing,
how to send things back into the brain. Once you can do all of these things, it's not just being able to hook up external arms like a mechanical arm. You may even be able to do things like take the signals from the brain and feed them back into people's original muscles. So if someone had a spinal cord injury, you will bypass the spine and be able to go directly back to the arms. Plus, you will be able to go the other way. You will be able to take sensory information, hot, cold, touch, feed that back into the brain. This is going to take time. It's going to take years, probably many years. It is absolutely going to happen. There's absolutely no chance it won't. And this is, it's going to be absolutely fantastic. And we have no clue. 100 years from now, it may be common for people to be partially interfaced in a mechanical way through their brains, because there may be people who will actually replace limbs purposely, perfectly good limbs.
Just to be able to do this.
To be able to have super, what you might call super strength and powers in a mechanical limb that has feeling, has touch, and has the ability to perform directly from the brain.
Cyborgs.
Absolutely fantastic.
I love it. Lauren, thank you so much for that. Now, some say this, I don't necessarily agree, that 2012 might have been the best year ever with these tragedies and these hurricanes and things like that. I don't know why they would say that, but they do. They say it might not feel like it, but 2012 has been the greatest year in the history of the world. That sounds like an extravagant claim, doesn't it? But they say it's borne out by evidence. They say never has there been less hunger, less disease, or more prosperity. The West remains in the economic doldrums, but most developing countries are charging ahead, and people are being lifted out of poverty at the fastest rate recorded. The death toll inflicted by war and natural disasters, they say, is very low. They say we are living in a golden age. Up next, Greg Hunter joins us. We'll talk about that. Are we living in a golden age? And later on, we'll take your phone calls. I want you to tell me what you think about 2012. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, he heads up USAWatchdog.com. Greg Hunter spent years on the network level as an investigative correspondent. He's a tough reporter. We're going to talk with him about a number of issues, specifically, though, why 2012, some say, is the best year ever. Greg, what do you think? Is it? I don't.
It's the most, it's just an unbelievable article that was written. It's the Spectator article. And, of course, what they omit, and they are right about that there's less disease. They probably are on the money about that. They are partially correct that there is going to be an energy boom in at least in America because of technology, partially, but it's going to be expensive. All the cheap stuff really is gone. That's why they're drilling oil at 5,000 feet. But I got to tell you, the article says forces of peace, progress, and prosperity are prevailing. And to that I say, no, the forces of crime, bailout, and fraud are prevailing. And let's just take HSBC that just paid a huge fine, a $1.9 billion fine for money laundering. Yeah. And helping, even helping forces that are engaged in terrorism, but money laundering for Mexican cartels. And all they got was a fine.
Yeah, and you know what? And if that was the fine, how much do you think they made on all those deals?
Well, part of the punishment was that their bonuses would be delayed. And do you know why? That the government, specifically when they're asked, hey, why no, the U.S. government, why no criminal charges? And I believe, I've said this on your show before, the reason why these guys aren't prosecuted, the system is so fragile, they're afraid they'll cause a systemic failure. Now, if you look at housing or employment or anything on a chart, you have this big drop off in 2008 and yet this bottom bouncing. And what has kept us from really falling over the cliff, and they haven't fixed anything, they just postponed it, is the global quantitative easing. And I've been telling you for the better part of 2 years, there is no recovery. Bottom bouncing at best. No recovery. And what happened? On Wednesday, the 12th, the Federal Reserve said, hey, we're going to continue this Operation Twist. It's over. We're making short-term treasuries and put them into long-term treasuries. But we ran out of the short-term treasury. So we're still going to print $45 billion a month out of thin air. And we're going to add that to the $40 billion we're printing every month for mortgage-backed securities. If the economy was going so well, I ask you, George, would the Federal Reserve be printing $85 billion each and every month out of thin air if we were truly in a recovery
of
and we don't even know what's going on with dollar swap facilities?
Well, and Greg, like this article points out that these other countries, these other emerging nations may be doing better than we are. That's a possibility.
What do you think would happen? I want somebody to ask Bernanke this, and I would love to hear the be in the room when somebody said, hey, Ben Bernanke, what would happen if we just stopped all this $40 billion a month in mortgage-backed securities and $45 billion a month in buying treasuries? What do you think would happen if we stopped doing $85 billion each and every – that's $1 trillion a year, over $1 trillion a year. What would happen, Chairman Bernanke? Let me tell you what would happen, George. The system would implode.
Yes, it would.
And so when they're talking about how all these other countries are doing, what if we stopped the U.S.? Japan is getting ready for more money printing bonanza. The article in the country where it's written in the U.K., they've printed billions of pounds in an enormous amount of printed currency relative to their size, only about 70 million people in the U.K. And they're talking about how all this great – things are going so great that Asian countries are basically shunning the dollar and going to have their own currencies, and countries around the globe are shunning the world reserve currency, the dollar. And I got to tell you, if things were so great, and I'm USA Watchdogs, that's my – you know, what I do. We have every month, just about every month, we have a new record of number of people on food stamps. It's nearly 48 million people. That's so one in six and a half or so people, one in six people or so are on food stamps in America. And this is the best year ever. For who?
Not for us. Not for us. And then it's not ending in the right way. This tragedy in Connecticut's Hurricane Sandy, it's just not ending.
Listen, the Democrats don't care, and I'm neither Democrat nor Republican. They don't care anything. They would have taken on gun control in the first 2 years when Obama had the House and the Senate, and the president, first 2 years of his presidency. They don't care about these people. I mean, really, they don't really care. It's a political opportunity. They're going to, ban, assault weapons or crack down on guns. They've already gutted the due process of the U.S. Constitution, which nobody in the mainstream media will talk about. They can stick a bag over your head or over my head and drag me off and hold me indefinitely. And it says so in the president's signing statement. That's what the president says. So forget all the, malarkey about it doesn't really say that. No, it does. The president said so. So there's my source.
We've got this article, by the way, posted up next to your name, Greg, at coasttocoastam.com, so people can take a look at it. Who would write this article and be so excited about it?
I'm telling you that they're excited about, I don't know what they're excited about. They're talking about how less war. You're talking about less war. George, in 2013, the Israelis have already signaled that the Iranians are going to have enough weapons-grade material. And this is, I don't care what side you're on, and I'm not taking sides here. I'm telling you what is likely going to happen in 2013. And I think likely what's going to happen in 2013, one way or the other, the Iranians are going to be attacked by either Israel in the U.S. or Israel by itself. Because Netanyahu has already been, he was stood in front of the United Nations with the bomb and the red line and marked the red line, and they almost have enough, material for a bomb. And so I think that could be a disaster of world economic proportions if Iran is attacked.
I think so, too.
Without question. And then the whole Syria question is another bizarre world. We're supporting al-Qaeda. The U.S. is supporting al-Qaeda, but they are, on the other hand, they're trying to get a lawsuit dismissed where they killed three, U.S. citizens. One of them was allegedly with al-Qaeda.
Without due process.
Al-Awlaki. And the family suing, saying, hey, listen, you broke the Constitution. You went ahead and, you assassinated him without due process. Again, we're back to the Constitution. And, that it's just our foreign policy is all over the map. We're killing al-Qaeda allegedly in one part of in Yemen, and we're helping them in Libya, and that blew up in our face, and Putin predicted that.
And let me ask you this, too. Giving planes, fighter jets to the Egyptians?
We've had a long-standing military deal with the Egyptians. People don't realize that most of their military hardware is U.S. We've had people stationed in the Sinai Peninsula, which was lost in their, the Six-Day War and then given back. And we've had people stationed there we have people stationed there right now. So we had a long-standing military agreement with Egypt, and we pay them another $1.2 or $5 billion a year. Their economy is
some kind of
shambles.
Yet, who knows what's going to happen over there?
Well, according to the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists, they have a doomsday clock, and it's 5 minutes till midnight. In 2010, it was 6 minutes till midnight. So how these folks can write how 2012 was the best year ever, I got to tell you that without the enormous amounts of money printing globally. I mean, according to a GAO report, most people, this is flying all over their head. They don't really understand the numbers are so enormous. The Federal Reserve printed $16.1 trillion or $2 trillion to bail out the world. They say most of that was paid back, which I say define most. But, they stopped the crash from being worse, and they really stopped it for the wealthy, the upper echelon. The people at the bottom lost their houses. They lost their jobs. They still are offshore jobs. The economy has never recovered. And if you take a look at what the Federal Reserve actions just
at 12-12-12, where they said, hey, we're all in, we're going to continue to print money, they're going to continue to debase the dollar, and they say they, you know, relate it to unemployment gets down to 6.5%, but we still may continue to do that. I'm paraphrasing the Federal Reserve, but this is all stated policy. This is not some, you know, obscure, you know, calculations on my part. They have open-ended quantitative easing, open-ended 0% interest rates to 2015, mid-2015.
And they could go on even longer. Greg, we're going to come back in a moment and take some calls just to see how many people think 2012 was the best year ever. And welcome back to Coast. Greg Hunter with us. We'll take your calls. So, Greg, if they think that 2012 was the best year ever, I wonder what they're going to say about 2013.
People on the lower end of the echelon are going to think 2013 is going to be the biggest nightmare. I mean, already companies around the country that are cutting back full-time employees, the companies that don't offer health benefits, are going to come back to 29 hours. So your, hey, we love Obamacare is going to turn into, what? I'm going to get a pay cut and that I don't get as many hours. I mean, I got to go out and find another job. I got to go pay. Or companies on the edge of having 50 employees, 50, 60 employees, they may cut back to, you know, 49 employees. I'm telling you, this is going to be the worst. It's going to have all kinds of ugly, unintended consequences, and particularly for people on the lower end of the spectrum. This is going to hurt people on the lower end of the spectrum. Mark my words.
I think you're right. Let's take some calls. Let's go to Fran in Wisconsin. Welcome to the program, Fran. Go ahead.
Okay. 2012 was definitely not the best year we've ever had. I saw them take a meat cleaver to the Constitution of the United States, which just killed me every time they were taking another chunk out of it. The NDAA was one of the worst pieces of legislation ever signed. And then President Obama signed an executive order on March 17th that everybody ought to take a look at, see how they like that one. On top of that, there is a lawsuit for the $43 trillion TARP money. It's got over 500 defendants on it. One of them is Eric Holder, our soon-to-be ex-attorney general. Now, you tell me where there's any good in all of that, anywhere.
How would you rate the year, Fran, on a 1 to 10?
As far going
ten being the best year?
Oh, hell, minus 10.
Oh, gosh.
Excuse my language.
That's okay. You can get by with that. That's not a bad word. That's a place where you go when you are bad. Thanks for the call. Greg, is it that bad?
Frankly, yes. I mean, and none of this was talked about in the election. I mean, I was on your show and I talked about all the issues that was during, the election night. And they didn't, the Republicans who like to champion, you know, the Tea Party and we believe in the Constitution. Hey, they voted for that. My congressman here voted for that because he was being a team player, according to somebody in his office who I talked to. And he was a Republican. And so, you know, listen, they all lined up. They just reaffirmed the NDAA in another vote. They just reaffirmed that they can stick a bag over somebody's head. They can indefinitely detain people that they claim are quote-unquote terrorists.
Without due process.
Without due process. And then the other thing is that you have the presidential's license, the presidential powers to license to kill, you know, order, a drone strike on anybody in or outside of the country. It is unbelievable what is happening with the U.S. Constitution, and now we have this terrible tragedy up in the Northeast. And what you're not hearing about is the Portland mall shooter that happened, and what's being suppressed is a story on my site. You know what he ran into? He ran into a guy with a concealed carry permit.
Mm-hmm.
Bing, end of story. Shooter stopped. And if they know all these schools are vulnerable, why don't they have an armed police officer at every school? All you need is one. One armed police officer could put the kibosh on it in a hurry. You know, when you're getting shot at, I don't care if you got body armor or not, you know, you tend to kind of duck. And that's why this kid, everybody's trying to figure out, well, what really went wrong with this? He's crazy. That's what you're never going to figure out what went wrong. The guy's nuts.
The guy's nuts.
The guy's crazy. You're not going to figure out what went wrong. He's crazy and that you need to spend more money on mental health programs.
Next up, we go to Shirley in Memphis, Tennessee. Hey, Shirley, go ahead.
Oh, George, it's so wonderful to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you.
I've been listening since 93, and of course, I'm not sure exactly when you came on, but I've been listening to you since...
I've been on for a long time now.
I know. Well, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
You know, I'm a long time, I guess, political junkie. But I listen to a lot of things, and, you know, I try to make a difference. And I believe this is really just the opposite. I don't believe this is the best year by far. And if it's not the worst year, I'd like for someone to say, you know, which year was worse than this, because we've had so many killings. This one really took me down.
I know. This one's draining. Just emotionally draining. And
it's almost unbearable. I want to cry, you know, but I can't because I'm hurting so bad.
I know how you feel. It's tough to get up for Christmas and get excited about the new year.
I haven't even been able to cry, and that's really unusual.
I saw pictures of those little kids over the weekend. I mean, they were gorgeous little kids with bright futures.
And the thing that I have trouble with is that God loves the worst, the people that do these things, just as much as he does us.
I'm not sure he does.
I know. Sometimes I have trouble overcoming myself with that, but I'm human. And I think you're so wonderful. I don't know what your involvement is in all this, but I think that it's comforting that you're here.
Well, that's my job, Shirley. That's what I'm supposed to do. You know, Greg, as we look at all of this, remember how, like, every New Year's you're out with your wife or your girlfriend and you say, I'm glad this year's over? How many people actually say on New Year's Eve, I'm going to miss this year? Nobody. Everybody looks forward to the next year, don't they?
They do. I mean, they did extraordinary things to keep the fantasy and the dreamscape of the economy, you know, doing as good as it is. I mean, we have subprime car loans. The real estate market, we have suppressed interest rates because the Fed's buying all this debt, and they don't put the debt out there for people to bid on it. And if they did and got an actual real bid on it, you know, you'd have 7 or 8 or 9 or 10% interest rates. They have done enormous, extraordinary, terrible things, but they didn't fix anything. The one thing they needed to do was take the banks to receivership. You know, fire the executives, keep the banks. That did not happen. We are continuing to bail them out, and we are doing it overtly with the Federal Reserve, $40 billion a month because they're so terrible. We have phony accounting at the banks. They do the same thing overseas. They can value these houses and mortgage-backed securities on their books at whatever they think they can sell them for in the future. We had massive amounts of fraud. LIBOR has been called the biggest banking scandal in history, where they rigged rates on instruments that account for as much as $800 trillion in business. George, it is what has happened. I mean, that go back to your article, forces of peace, progress, and prosperity are prevailing. No, the forces of fraud, crime, and government cover-up of this stuff are prevailing, but they won't prevail in the end. They won't win in the end. That is the problem, that people are being lulled to this false sense of security, and they're going to wake up with an iron skillet full of bacon grease in the face.
I think so, too. Greg, let's take a few more calls here. We'll go to Gary in Buffalo, Wyoming, west of the Rockies. Gary, you're on with Greg Hunter.
Well, thank you so much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
You just mentioned about, you know, when you come to the end of the year and you say, wow, I'm so glad this year is finally over.
So
well, I can truly attest to that, and yet the year still isn't over yet. I have had a horrible year, and I've had health problems, and I've had problems with my jobs. I've lost 3 jobs so far this year.
Jeez.
And I'm a broadcaster, believe it or not. But losing three jobs because of my health mainly. I started off the year with Charcot foot, which is a complication of diabetes. And then I wound up breaking my hip in a freak accident, lost my job because of that. And then I had an infection that got into my right leg. And it's the same leg as the Charcot and the hip. And then I got a second infection in October, and I lost my leg.
I was just going to ask you that. They had to amputate it, didn't they?
Done from the knee down.
Oh, man.
And I lost my next job because of my amputation, because I'm in a right-to-work state. And because I was under 90 days probationary period, when most people have, you know, that scenario, in a right-to-work state, they can just, you know, literally fire you for...
Well, Gary, let me ask you this. In spite of all these horrible things, you still seem to be floating above water emotionally.
You know, it's from the grace of God, because I have a strong faith.
Good for you.
I'm able to have confidence and stay positive, because I feel like you can't be much worse than what's going on.
No.
I can only turn the corner and go for the better. You know, and I also went through a divorce this year on top of everything else.
But, you know, if you put things in perspective, Gary, we've got this tragedy in Connecticut where parents have lost their beautiful children. There's not much that's worse than that.
And I look at it like all the problems I've had is nothing compared to what they're going through right now.
You have that right. Thanks for sharing that. Hey, he's right, Greg. He's right on.
He had a tough year, let me tell you. He's had a terrible
year. But he's still there.
A lot of Americans are struggling, and they're still, you know, they keep, there's 28 or so million Americans underemployed and unemployed. And, you know, they're getting these great gains in unemployment, 7.7%. We had some hundreds of thousands of people leave the workforce, you know, every few months, hundreds of thousands.
And what does that mean? Give me that definition. That means basically they're not looking for work, right?
That means they're not counted. And it used to be in 1994 and earlier, when they did unemployment reporting, whether it was 2 years, or whether you were discouraged or not discouraged or whatever, everybody counted. And it didn't make any difference how long you were unemployed, or how, or whether you were discouraged, or whether you gave up looking for work or whatever, they counted you. And if you did unemployment the way it was done in 1994 or earlier, according to John Williams, my friend at ChattelStats.com, you'd have nearly a 23% unemployment rate, for real. And that's if you did it the way the government did it back in 94 and earlier. So the other thing I wanted to bring up, and I did this on my weekly news wrap-up on my site this week. I was out in Missouri at my mom's farm, and I talked to buddies of mine who are farmers. They farm 500-600 acres or whatever. They're big farmers. We have a farmer on our property that rents out our property. And, you know, the drought is not over by a long shot. I mean, you drive over the Mississippi River, I look down, I see rapids. I've never seen that before in my entire life.
Hmm.
It's unbelievable. And you know how much, I think a third of the nation's grain floats down the Mississippi River.
They
they're dredging
sure
it. It's unbelievable. And they're having almost water wars up north, where they have, you know, lakes dammed up on the Missouri River, and they want them to release water. And they say, hey, that's our recreational lake. And they're saying, hey, we need the water down here. If that happens, if this drought continues, you're going to see food prices skyrocket as yields on crops go down.
Oh, absolutely. They're not going to be able to get the food to us. Let's go to Van in Augusta, Georgia. Hey, Van, thank you for calling.
Hey, George, I just want to tell you how much I've been enjoying your show, and it's just been a blessing to me. It's like a ray of light in a world of darkness. I finally hear some truth.
Thank you, Van.
Besides the mainstream media, what I've noticed is a lot of people now are just stressed out, and burned out, and worried
because
of all the events that are going on. These staged false flag events are premeditated to get our minds, you know, off what's really going on and keep us in a worried state of mind. And I think these kids are being programmed to do these things with the drugs they're on and the way they're brought up with the gun culture and the violent videos. And our soldiers are committing suicide. They're on drugs now, and just like the whole world's just unraveling. But your show is like the one bright spot in my life right now.
Well, Van, let me tell you, we got to keep pushing because you can't give up. Never, ever give up. Greg, you're a toughie. You hang in there.
Thanks, man. Really appreciate it.
Let's go to Mike, San Diego, California. Nope, he's not ready yet. But John in Milford, Connecticut is. Hey, John.
Hello.
Hey, go ahead, John.
Hey, George. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, I've been a big fan of yours for many years. I worked long into the night listening to you here in Connecticut doing my job. But, you know, I live about 20 minutes from Sandy Hook. Used to go visit it with my girlfriend. Great little place. And I can't believe what's happened here. It's not the way, you know,
no.
These people want to be put on the map. And it's great to see everybody here. But, you know, 2012 has been probably a crummy year for a lot of people, and including myself. And, you know, the way this country's going and this thing that happened, it's just, you know, I've been listening to you for years, and, you know, you've been saying for a long time how people are just getting out of control.
And it's getting worse, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, this thing that's happened, it's just, I see those pictures, and, you know, and I knew it was going to hit when you start seeing the pictures of the kids. And it's just a horrible thing. And to have it so close to home, I was telling my girlfriend just the other day, I said, geez, you know, what's going on in Colorado, you know, thinking it was so far away.
Yeah, and now it's home.
It literally is like 20 minutes from where I live. And it's a beautiful place. And I just can't imagine what, you know, it's not so far away anymore. And, you know, how do you solve it, you know?
Well, and you can't, you know, Greg, it's like a piece of you has been cut away. Do you feel that?
Yeah, I do. Yep. I think it's horrible.
I mean, like chopped right off us. It's gone.
It's, you know, it's horrible to see anybody, you know, lose their life, especially when you're, you know, five and 6 and 7 years old.
It's almost as if we just need to get by. Just get by, and you can probably be happy that way. Do you feel that?
You know, what I tell people is, you know, I don't know what's going to happen on the 21st of December. I don't know if we're going to have tidal shifts and earthquakes. I don't know that.
Listening to the program. You never know.
Well, but we could. I mean, that's not, you know, that's something, that's a scientific fact. It happens once every 26,000 years. That's going to happen on the 21st. And they're also having these king tides out, you know, on the coast, especially out in the Pacific. But I do know one thing, and this is what I do know, and I think that people should do everything they can to try to get themselves in the best position possible. Don't take on any debt. Try to have some money in reserve. You know, I'm not talking about prepping and doom and gloom and anything like that. But what's going to come in the not too distant future is some sort of currency crisis for the United States. That is a fact that is coming. I talked to three PhD level people just in the last few weeks, and one's a PhD in statistics. And I had him on the site. One's a former assistant treasury secretary, PhD in economics. Another one's another PhD in neurology, I think, and then writes financial stuff. And all three of them said, unsolicited, that they're surprised that the economy stayed afloat as long as it has.
You know, it was propped up, Greg, as you know, with this fiat currency, money without nothing backing it. And I don't know how long that could last. Greg, thank you so much. You enjoy yourself. If we don't talk to you before Christmas, have a merry one, but I'm sure we will. I'll be back in a moment as we talk about ancient civilizations and structures on Coast to Coast AM.